Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Welcome to a very special 200th episode of the Early Excellence podcast. In this episode, Nancy Stewart joins us to talk about her career at the forefront of early years education and also about the new updated version of Birth to Five Matters. So here you go. Here's our 200th episode, our Early Excellence podcast chat with Nancy Stewart. Nancy, hiya, how are you?
Hello, Andy. I'm very well. Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us. It is great to catch up with you. Now, you've been really busy, haven't you, over the last few months, particularly in terms of Birth to Five Matters, and that's what we're going to be talking about. We've got lots to catch up on in terms of the review of Birth to Five Matters and the new version of it and the ideas around it, which is all very much open to conversation and discussion at the minute, which is great. So there's lots to catch up on that. Before we get started on that, would you mind giving us an introduction?
Well, I've had a very long career working with children and families across all the sectors, really. Started out in schools, working with children in the States, actually, sort of 6-7 year olds. Came to this country and decided, you know, really early years was my thing. I set up a private kindergarten to start with for very young children, sort of Montessori based, but I'm not Montessori trained, I'm sorry to say, but having read and studied, there were some ideas I really wanted to use. And then worked in schools as a nursery teacher, assistant head, deputy head, and also overseeing Key Stage 1. And while I was there, started having a day a week out supporting settings across in the county. And so started edging into advisory work, worked for the move finally into the local authority advisory work for some time. Then I worked for National Strategies, in which I was a senior early years advisor. My main area there was language development with the Every Child a Talker program.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was a great time to be involved at the government level because it was the Tickell review looking at the EYFS in sort of 2010, 2011.
Then Claire Tickell,
that's right. That's right. And there were four of us from the National Strategies that they drafted in to advise and give background material and so on. Fantastic, because we were able to kind of spearhead a couple of what I think are very important changes to the EYFS. One was identifying prime areas and saying that, you know, these have a particular focus for children all the way, especially the youngest. And also the characteristics of effective learning and spelling them out. And when it was made statutory, hooray, that was so important.
Yes.
So then after...
I just wanted to say what a special time to be involved. You know, you're right at the heart there of government policy really around early years education and really putting forward such very important messages around the prime areas and the characteristics of effective learning. Mm. That must have been hugely, I think, rewarding, but also, you know, I would think exciting as well.
Yeah. Yes, really. I thought then, well, if I retire now, I'm happy.
Yeah,
you know, something significant has really happened. And it was great to draw on people that I had worked with in organizations who were academics who could give us all of the background so we could write the evidence. You know, why are prime areas prime? Why are they essential parts of child development? And why are the characteristics fundamental, knowing why how children learn? So that was great. After that, I worked with Helen Moylett, my colleague that I did a lot of independent work with after we both left the strategies closed. And we together coordinated the 2012 version of Development Matters, a big group of people that everything circulated through, lots of iterations, but put together development matters, which over coming years, people seemed to think was the EYFS, even though actually it was always non-statutory.
Yes, the balance between statutory and non-statutory is always interesting. What people assume is statutory often isn't, which is always really interesting. And actually what is statutory often isn't really taken that much notice of, which is always an interesting thing, really. There's an interesting balance there.
It is, to see what is it that I have to put into practice. And often there's a lot of leeway, put it into practice in your own way, but this is the bottom line. Whereas all of the non-statutory guidance is very much up to each practitioner and setting to look at and develop their own way forward. So over the next period, I did a lot of independent consulting work, a lot of it around the characteristics of effective learning, writing and training and so on. And that was also very exciting, that message really getting out there, that it's important. After some time, the government decided to again look at the EYFS. So 2020, 2019, 2020, the revisions were being mooted and came in. And at that point, a group of organizations got together and formed the Early Years Coalition, which was, I think, 16 national organizations covering the gamut from preschools, schools, big national charities, academic groups, the National Teaching Union, lots of organizations. And they said, because non-statutory guidance is, you know, anyone can do it and you can choose whether to use it or not, they decided to commission something that came from the sector. I think there was a feeling that the government was making changes without as much consultation as we would have liked to see, and that there wasn't necessarily a strong voice from early years educators and people who had worked on the ground, knew what the issues were. And so they said, well, we can do our own. It reminds me of those old films where people say, let's put on a show.
It was an interesting time, actually, thinking back to it, that I can remember in those sort of early versions of the EYFS framework, there being a few things in there that definitely raised eyebrows in terms of people who'd been working within the EYFS for a while, who really understood child development. There were certain things in there that you started to question. So things like, I remember that sort of mention of mapping skills in the early learning goals, for example, you know, that sort of thing that kind of drifted in, you know, those sort certain things that you thought, oh, hang on a minute, does that really fit with what you would expect a child at that age to be doing? And so I can see that actually this was kind of fertile ground, I would think, in terms of the Early Years Coalition, in terms of having those discussions and conversations about, well, actually, what could be an alternative to that?
Yes, yes. And it was the idea that it should arise from the ground up. Its subheading is Birth to Five Matters, you know, by the sector, for the sector. It really was listening to what people told us was important to them and what they wanted and what would support their practice, right? From the beginning. One of the drivers from the government's point of view in changing the guidance and changing the framework itself was a really important one, which was that the Development Matters version that Helen Moylett and I had spearheaded had turned into an appalling checklist, even though on the bottom of every page of the document, it said, this is not a check, should not be used as a checklist.
It said it right the way through. That was the funny thing about it. It couldn't have been clearer. Yeah. It was like a stick of rock with the lettering running right the way through. Exactly. This is not going to be used as a checklist. Yes, and yet people were.
That children are not expected to do all of these things. They may well do them in a different order. There is no expectation that this is prescriptive. It's to give you a general guideline of directions that children might move in, not necessarily like this. And yet it had become so rigid that people were ticking off every statement and saying, oh, we have to observe each statement three times before we say there's...
There was a lot of that at the time, wasn't there? Doing everything three times, you know, and that just tied everybody up in knots, and people were gathering what they called evidence in inverted commas. You know, it's evidence of this and it's evidence of that. And it was just crazy time, really.
Yeah. You know, those messages were coming from advisors and from Ofsted saying, well, how do you know where the child is? Where's your evidence? And the concern that practitioners were taken away from actually being with children.
Yes.
And instead were sitting there writing or photographing or making notes on their iPad is a really important one. Yeah. And in doing Birth to Five Matters, that is also something that we were concerned about and wanted to avoid.
Yes. Particularly, I think, when you think back to what you were saying right at the very beginning, when you were introducing yourself, your interest in communication and language development, that actually you take an adult out of the picture because they are making notes or taking photographs, and straight away, they aren't really thinking about how they are engaging with the child. They're just thinking about recording that moment. That's so, you know, that's something crucial there, isn't it, that I think is being missed.
Yeah, there's a danger of what it's all about being lost.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, so that was important. So I was hired, and it was during lockdown.
Yes.
So everyone was at home. I was hired to do a 0.5 job along with a project assistant to design, write, produce some new guidance, non-statutory guidance. And straight away, I thought, well, there are so many wonderful people out there who know so much, and we need to draw on them. So we came up with the idea of working groups, that we would have expert specialist working groups in all of the areas that the guidance would cover. And as it developed, those working groups had roughly 5 or 6 people, and each group had academics, so they had access to all the journals and evidence, and people who were doing training and consulting or whatever, and also people who were currently working in settings. And every setting, every working group needed that because it had to be grounded. So those groups were set up. And then we did an initial consultation that was very open, saying, you know, what do you want? What is most important to you in guidance? I think we did 3 in the end. And they're a very big job taking comments from hundreds and hundreds of people.
Yes, collecting information must have been huge, I should think. Without, really, and wanting to do justice to, you know, everybody who'd been involved, at the same time knowing that you couldn't put out War and Peace, some huge document that nobody could wade their way through. You know, and that's quite a tricky balance, isn't it, I guess?
It is. And we're still facing that now because, you know, Birth to Five Matters has that whole front section around foundations of high quality practice, and then goes through the principles. So what do we mean by unique child? You know, looking at child development and so on, what do we mean by enabling environments and learning and development? So we then at the end get into the ranges, we call it, all the areas of learning broken down, looking again at typical possible progressions, and really importantly, with every bit alongside, so what should the adult do to respond? How might they interact? What experiences and opportunities might they give them in an enabling environment? So that's all at the end. And some people, I think, would like just to have that. And because we've said, no, you need the grounding.
You need everything else, don't you? Yeah, it's principles really into practice. That's the key, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. Mm. So some people said, oh, it's a bit big. No, it's not that big, but... So that's something we're looking at now as well. That was included in our survey for the revision. And so we kept it as brief as we could. And also it's in layers. So each section has key points. And if you wanted, you could just skim the key points. Or you could read the page or two that goes with them. Or you could go to the website where there are a lot of further resources linked to each section.
Yes.
So it's multi-layered.
Yeah, so people can go as far as they want with it. They can dip into it, or they can kind of really go into the depth of information which is behind it on the website and so on.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's great. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and I just wanted to take a moment to talk to you about A World of Wonder, our outdoor roadshow for early years in Key Stage 1. We're touring up and down the country, bringing a full day of inspirational training to a school near you, with a morning session for school leaders to reflect, evaluate and unpick effective outdoor learning, followed by an afternoon session for phase leaders and teachers to really dig into continuous provision planning for the outdoors, so that you can ensure there's a strong connection to the curriculum and that we're enabling progression for the ages of the children that we're teaching. The final session of the day is a guided learning walk around the Early Excellence Outdoor Model Classroom. Today will be a great opportunity to review and strengthen your early years and Key Stage 1 outdoor learning opportunities. And with access to that learning environment in each of the sessions, it's sure to be an immersive and unique CPD opportunity. To find out more or to book your places, do visit the Early Excellence website, earlyexcellence.com. I really hope to see you at one of the events. They're going to be great.
Yeah, so it was published in spring of 21.
Yes.
So now it's 5 years old by, you know, so 20.
At the point where you're reviewing it. Actually, exactly. Before we get on to the sort of the review process, because mm-hmm. I know there's a lot going on in terms of the review and a survey and all sorts of things like that.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you actually, in terms of Birth to Five Matters, when you then started to put that together in, I think you said 2021, mm-hmm. did you personally draw on your own experience of what you'd done years before with Helen Moylett? When mm-hmm. you worked mm-hmm. on the EYFS framework, mm-hmm. I'm interested to know, as I've got you on the call, you know,
right.
how much of what you'd done previously were you able to draw forward? Yes. Were you able to do that?
I don't think I personally really did, because I have to say it's a huge team project.
It's more of a team effort, yes.
Yes. I think probably the individual working groups, so for instance, the communication and language working group might have looked back at what Development Matters had to say about it,
yes.
and might have taken that as a starting point. But it was all written fresh.
Actually. More collaborative.
I think possibly the way that we laid out Development Matters very clearly in terms of the unique child. So this is what you might see children doing.
Yes.
And then here's the adult role. I think that was what mainly carried through.
Yes, but it did come through. And you can see that, I think. There is a similar structure there that you can definitely see carrying through, whether that was your own personal influence on the day or people being influenced by the previous documentation. I don't know. But you can certainly see that, which is why I was interested to know. Mm. You mentioned Helen Moylett, sorry. You mentioned Helen Moylett just before. Interestingly, I think I've only met her maybe two or three times, Helen Moylett. And every time I've spoken to her, I think she thinks I'm crazy. Because the first time I met her, I was working at, so it was when I'd first started at Early Excellence, and we had the centre over in Huddersfield, and I was one of the curriculum team over at the centre in Huddersfield, and one of my roles from time to time was to introduce speakers who came to the centre to deliver training, and if I was the member of the curriculum team who was there at the centre on that day, then I would also have lunch with the person who was there training and, make sure that they were okay and all of that sort of thing. And I'd just come out of the classroom, literally just weeks or, a few months before, I'd literally just come out of the classroom using what would have been the 2012 version of the EYFS framework. And for me, those particular versions were absolutely crucial to my own career. You know, particularly the previous version, which had the flashcards in it, not flashcards as in
the card,
but cards in terms of practice, that sort of questioning
principles
practice,
into practice,
all of those sorts of things. And it made a big difference for me. You know, that real focus on enabling environments, you know, and that open-ended nature of the materials and the resources and the visual prompts for it made a big difference to my career. So anyway, so I was there at the centre and Helen Moylett came along to speak. And then I ended up having lunch with Helen, you know, and I was sat there. It was like having lunch with Paul McCartney and getting the chance to talk about his songwriting. And it was just the most incredible thing. Yeah. So she talked to me about, you know, how you'd worked together to put together the EYFS framework, how you'd kind of worked on different parts of it and, collaborated on it and put ideas together and so on. It just sounded like such an exciting and interesting time, really. So, yes, I was absolutely starstruck.
Oh, she probably gets that a lot, but she is a star, I have to say.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So, yeah, so I think every time I meet her, which is only, as I say, only two or three times, I think she thinks I'm a little bit crazy.
I'm sure in a good way.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Right. So we're then on to the new version of Birth to Five Matters. Where are we at with that then?
Okay, before we do that, let me tell you about the original one and what was the hardest
thing
to come to an agreement around.
That would be great.
And it had to do with not having a checklist and yet wanting some detail that helped people to understand a child development progression and et cetera. And people were asking for that. They wanted detail, a birth and onward. But we're not going to age link this. And the previous development matters had the overlapping ages. So you might be 8 to 20 months, you might be 16 to 32.
That's right.
But people weren't exactly happy with that.
No, but it was coming from the right place, though. I get that some people
important.
Don't like that blurring of boundaries. Yeah, I get that. But
if
actually,
if you're two, this is your milestone. Well, I'm sorry, children aren't like that.
No, but actually, it was absolutely coming from the right place and forcing people to have great conversations, really, I think, about being specific about what those children could or couldn't do and what their next step or stage might be,
yes.
I think.
Yes. So we wanted the detail and so on. And then there were some people who said we should put no age typical range at all, that it's just all one thing. But for people who are trying to understand whether children might have a particular need, are they rough? You can't say a two-year-old is the same as a five-year-old.
No,
so
sure.
Is this typical for two or typical for five? Some way of looking at that. So we came up with model after model that went on to the surveys and finally came up with the one which we do have.
Yes.
Which is in ranges rather than age-linked, and then very highly overlapping age indications that show how old you might or might not be. Then the other thing that we did to try to avoid checklisting it was there are a number of online platforms that people use to do, communicate with parents, keep their observations, and do their assessments on. And a number of online companies said, can we put Birth to Five Matters on our platform? And we license people to use it on the firm understanding that they can never pull out individual statements and do a checklist.
Right. Yeah.
That they can only look at it as a best fit judgment in a phase within a range, because that we felt that was crucial to avoid it being misused again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I also think, it, just going back to what you were saying about the idea of kind of age ranges or phases and so on and how you organize that, I would have thought as well, I don't know, but I would think that when we're talking about the groups of people that you had as working parties working on it, they're all people with a great deal of experience, I would think. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No.
But you were talking about people who were trainers, consultants, talking about people who presumably were very experienced as teachers and practitioners within nurseries and within reception classes and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite hard after a while to think back to what it's like when you first start and you haven't got that understanding of child development, I think, when you are at a certain point in your career. But I would think having the phases and having some kind of structure to it, like you say, what's typical for a two-year-old or what's typical for a five-year-old and how are the differences? Actually, that is important for some people, isn't it, who are new to it, to give them a good starting point. But that's quite a hard thing to balance because you don't want the tick list either.
No. So that was our challenge. And
yes.
I think we've done it pretty well.
Yes.
Certainly the feedback that we've had in the revision is, although there's a small minority, very small, who said, we want you to tell us for two and three so that it matches with health milestones or whatever. It was a very small number. Most people said they really appreciate it. They appreciate the understanding that it gives people about unique children and that you can't have those sort of cut-off expectations.
Yes.
And people are finding it fine to work with it. So
absolutely. One of the things that I really like about it is that what comes across, I think, very clearly is the holistic nature of the UIFS within the document. In fact, it's got a slide where you see an image where you see all of those different kind of interlocking sections of the UIFS. And I think sometimes we lose that and we don't talk about that enough, particularly like you said earlier, when you start to focus in on what am I observing and kind of almost like a kind of a tick sheet kind of approach. People become very blinkered and then just start to look at the mathematics, or they just start to look at their physical development, when actually by doing that, they could very well be missing out on an awful lot of other really important stuff. And I think what you did really effectively was make sure that there were clear messages about the holistic nature of the UIF and children's learning.
Yes, I think some of my favorite pages in it are the two where there's a photograph of a child in the center. The first one is a young toddler in a high chair with an apple and a care person there. And around them are all the areas of learning and the characteristics, and saying all this is going on in every moment. And then the next is a couple of children playing who are a bit older. Everything's going on for them. And I think to help people to see that, that for our own convenience in understanding learning, we sort of artificially split it into these areas. But it's all happening at once all the time for the child.
But these are important messages, aren't they? As I say, you know, there'll be people who are coming to it completely new. And so actually we have to think about those people who are newly qualified teachers or who are coming to the EYFS from a different year group and who are needing those key principles, really, that they haven't had that previously. And so, it's important, isn't it?
Yes.
We could lose that. So it is important. Mm. Yeah, very good. Okay. So those are, in terms of then what we've had then from 2020, 2021, we've had that Birth to Five Matters document with all of those key principles within it, with the working parties that put it together, with a structure that you agreed on that isn't always going to keep everybody happy, but it sounds like you did a very good job of keeping as many people as possible happy. Fast forward then to what, November? Is it November?
October we started. 25. Okay. We started the project. And the Early Years Coalition again, which is slightly enlarged, has some new members. And it's time to review it and update it, because there is new research. There are new issues in society.
Of course.
It's not the same world as we were in 2020. So let's look again, both from the point of view of what is now known that might not have been known. What are the context challenges? But also, we need to ask practitioners again. If you're using Birth to Five, what works for you and what things don't work, or what do you want more of? Where are the gaps? So we did a big survey to start with, and we had 1,300 plus responses, and some of them were kind of yes, no, or rank order questions, but a lot of open questions. So people were able to make their comments quite freely about what they thought. And that was fantastic, you know, that we really wanted to, again, start from what people say. What works, what doesn't. And the main message from it was that people love it and don't change it too much came through very clearly, which I totally sympathize with, because, you know, things that come up from government where you're happily using one thing and then suddenly we have a new approach. People were very clear that it's widely used in professional development, both in initial training, in ongoing development. And really interestingly, managers in settings and senior leadership teams in schools are using it a lot in staff development. So it's used to embed some of those messages, but also really used on the ground. And, you know, people find it so helpful to think about a child, to use those grids at the end to think, okay, what do I think they're doing here in their development? And how can I help? How do I support? So it's great that we had really, really strong endorsement. In terms of things that we can improve, there were lots and lots of little points that were so useful, because we can, I mean, I've sorted them all out into which section they relate to. And those have all gone to the working groups so that they can respond to those.
Yes.
I have given the working groups format, because we've taken on board the don't change too much message.
Yes.
And so they have to evidence any change they want to make.
Yeah.
So why? How do you know this is better? Did it come from feedback from the sector? Did it come from research? Is it a new theory that people hadn't really engaged with before? You know, what is it? Is it practice experience? So to keep them on their toes, to not just throw things out and redo it. So that's one thing that we're definitely responding to. But we also asked about gaps and things people would like more of. And we've commissioned some new working groups. One is on sustainability. And that was the top in the feedback, that people felt we needed more support for not talking about sustainability of a setting, of making sure that be as low carbon as you can in a setting.
Yes.
But how do we, what's the pedagogy for children to grow up with that understanding of climate and sustainability? So yes, we have a new expert group who's going to provide guidance on that.
That's interesting. That is very much a new area, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's not been there before. I mean, it was alluded to a little bit in the understanding the world and so on. We also have a new group, which is quite groundbreaking, on digital pedagogy.
Interesting, yeah.
And at the moment, there is no guidance whatsoever on use of IT with young children in educational care contexts. There's some, quite, it's growing, about use in the home, you know, even with very young children and babies, but not in terms of the pedagogy in settings. And it's kind of crept in. So you go in and you see nursery rhymes on the screen rather than somebody sitting and singing with the children, or, you know, stories on the screen, or a maths activity rather than hands-on. And it's something that is just, it's there. It's, I don't know, maybe it's easy. I think once you get into reception, sometimes there are schemes that people buy in. And so they're hardly thinking and responding to the children and giving them those hands-on experiences.
Yes.
Because it's all on screen. So we have a group that is looking specifically at how do you work from early years principles to use digital technology in responsible and effective ways.
In terms of the surveys as well, did you find, I'm just thinking about key things that I certainly hear a lot about as I work in schools and settings, SEND tends to come up a lot in conversations at the moment, doesn't it? Certainly over the last few years, it's become a huge thing that, of course, everybody is talking about. Did that come through within the survey
it
responses?
Did. Yes, we had lots and lots of comments. And they were sometimes contradictory because sometimes people would say we want a lot more detailed guidance in terms of children's progression or
small steps. Or children with special educational needs. Yes.
Other people were saying they find birth to five matters very helpful because it is relatively fine-grained. In the steering group for the Early Years Coalition, we talked over how do we respond to that. And I think a really important thing is to recognize we cannot become the tiny, tiny, fine-grained guide for children with special educational needs. But there are resources out there, and that we need to be making those links.
So there's links and connections. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. And one thing that we've realized is that the resources sections in the website are probably underused, and some people said they didn't really know about them.
Okay.
And great idea came up from one of the working group members was that on every page, we should have a QR code that leads straight to the resources section. So we can put a lot of additional CND support that can't fit within the main document, but can be available, made available to people. Also, there were a lot of specific comments that went to the SEND group, and we're considering whether we need to enlarge that section. Working group last time felt very strongly that SEND should not have a separate thing because of inclusion, and it should be just part of inclusion and equalities. So there is a section, but not so highlighted. And they're now considering, the current working group, new working group, how do we respond to the comments that we've seen to help people to find there is support here and we can help you to get it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. The exciting times again.
It is really exciting.
And to see it through the process through and to hear, it's really interesting to hear about, you know, how you go about doing that, you know, how you go about changing documentation, how you make sure that actually you are listening to as many people as possible, but at the same time, trying to hold on to those key principles for you that are there within the document that have always been there. You know, that's a tricky balancing act, I guess,
it is,
but really important. Okay, so we've talked about potential changes to the original version.
Yeah, there are some more. Another thing that arose really from the coalition, and when we asked in the survey whether they agreed that these were areas of gaps or could be better. Yes, but they weren't top priority, which sustainability was. But that has to do with the way the context has changed in terms of government funding for places from 9 months.
Of course, for younger children. Yes.
Yep, the younger, and how much real support and knowledge in the sector is there about babies, especially if they're going to be added into settings that haven't had babies before. So we decided we did need an under twos group to really focus on that. And then the other end, well, what about reception and into key stage one? And the survey came back with very strong push. Why isn't it birth to seven? You don't stop being a young child when you're five.
Interesting.
So one of the, I think, most significant new emphases that we're introducing is we're going to look at transition in a more complex sense. So there's the transition for children, whether they're horizontal through their day or whatever, or the vertical transition. We had that section before, and we will include that sort of material again. But we're also thinking about just the transition in being a child from babyhood to well beyond.
Yeah.
And that as children are changing, our pedagogy has to change, and that we need it. Pedagogy of transition. So there is continuity through the principles that always apply, but it will look different at different points in a child's journey. And so we're going to do something a little bit back to, you know, you liked those cards, those original EYMS cards.
Yeah.
Those lovely child development ones.
Absolutely.
Where they had, you know, took you through. We're going to do sort of that, a snapshot spectrum from under twos, twos, three, fours, and reception and beyond. And we're going to signal that really key stage one needs to be looking at all this too.
Yeah, you know, brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like you can very much be at the forefront of changing practice there. Mm-hmm. That if you open up those conversations between EYFS team members and EYFS leaders and key stage one staff, key stage one teachers, talking about continuity, talking about progression, what does that look like, talking about child development. These are all important conversations, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They are. And I know there is a kind of campaigning side to that, that in terms of changing key stage one and the way it's viewed. But I think you're right that it is signaling this is important and people need to consider consider that, you know, that journey for the child doesn't have a cutoff. And yet we put these artificial cutoffs in there.
Yes.
So I think that's going to be interesting. And we're going to make it short and sharp, you know, very visual as well. So you could print them off and have them like your cards. But I think that's a good thing to be including at this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, this is really interesting. It feels like we're getting the sort of the behind the scenes information on everything that's coming soon. So we've talked about those likely changes, or certainly the conversations that you're having behind the scenes in terms of birth to five, about some of those key messages that are coming through from the survey, some of the questions that have come through from it, and the debates and the discussions that you're having with your teams as part of that. What happens next then in terms of, you know, moving from where you're at now in terms of the surveys and then that going to the working parties? What's the timeline like? You know, do you actually have a timeline
that
you're working towards?
Yes,
what does that look like?
Pretty detailed project plan. All the groups submit their drafts to me, and I do an editing job really to maintain voice so that it reads coherently and consistently. And any queries I have about, you know, this maybe doesn't belong there, maybe belong somewhere else, whatever, send it back to them. So we have a little bit of a discussion. Then it will all be pulled together and go really at the end of March to, as a rough sort of draft A, to a reference group. So even more people we want to consult with who have expertise outside of our working groups. And also the whole thing will go to all of the working groups so they can comment on each other's bits. And then that all will come back, all the comments from that. And I'll have another go. I'm pulling it all together. And when we have agreed that draft one, that's going to go online. and it will be late April. It's always difficult. I'm avoiding Easter time, not necessarily wanting to look at their computer for things. But we will have a consultation period again, another survey, to say, okay, this is where we've got so far. What do you think? What could be better? What do you want us to do from here? And then when that all comes back, it'll be probably a 2 to 3 week consultation period. And then we'll analyze all of that. Comments go back to working groups again. It all comes back to me again. So, and reference groups again. But when we've got it together, then we will design it. And meanwhile, the working groups will also have been populating the resources, I think, much more fully than they are now online. We're hoping then the launch will be in the summer. We're looking at July, late June or July, hopefully before summer holidays, so people have a chance to look at it before next term, next autumn.
July 2026, ahead of September, when ideally people will be starting to use it and to be thinking about all of the content that you've talked about already.
Yes, that's the intention. We've left it a little bit loose, so we have a bit of wiggle room because, yes, you know, already people in the working groups come and say, oh, I know the deadline's the 20th, but can we make it the 25th?
Always, you know,
these are, they're all volunteers,
yes,
absolutely wonderful volunteers who are putting so much in because they really care about,
yes,
sharing what they know.
Yes.
They are. So if they need wiggle room, that's fine.
But it's interesting. It feels a bit like sort of bookended in a way, in that it feels like a project, if you could call it that, that came out of people's passions for the early years, that came out, yes, of that discussion about, well, actually, I'm not sure about this version of Development Matters and the conversations and the discussions, and very much with a passion for early years behind it, and that you're still at that point very much,
yes,
you know, with this, that people are having conversations and they're giving their time because they're passionate about it and completely committed to it.
Exactly. And I think the working group meetings are so rewarding because,
yes,
they're really putting their heads together and you know, sharing their important feelings as well as their knowledge.
Yeah. Yes.
And then, yes, in the last phase, we also will be looking at other things that have come up through the first survey. One is that although there were 95% said it's all accessible, readable, everything's fine, only 90% said the website was great. And there were comments about finding what they want. Or so we're going to have a look at whether we could do some improvements,
yes,
of the website. There were also requests for supporting materials for parents that they can share with parents easily. And really importantly, for leaders and managers, for instance, in schools where often the heads, and particularly in a MAT, a head of a MAT, are not early years people, and they don't understand or have the background in those key messages. So they want a very short message that they can share with leaders.
Brilliant. Yeah.
That's
key, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
I think as I've worked now for quite a while in terms of my work in schools, supporting schools and supporting them to move, supporting teachers and practice in terms of moving that practice forward. The one thing that for me always makes the difference is when the head teacher is on board. If the head teacher is involved, if they're part of the meetings, if they are, mm-hmm, showing an interest and they're part of the discussions, you tend to see then that the practice moves forward. When a head teacher isn't involved, you can still have progress and you can still, yeah, make a difference. Of course you can,
mm-hmm,
but it does become more difficult. And, mm-hmm, so, yeah, I think that idea, I think, of having materials that early years teachers and early years leaders can then share with school leaders in terms, mm-hmm, of those key messages, I think are key, really.
Yeah. So we will have to see. I mean, some people have said they'd really like us to do training, you know, not just,
okay,
a booklet,
yeah,
but training as well. This would be presumably an online thing or webinars,
okay,
we could do. But it will depend on, as we get to the end of the project, the slush fund, whether,
yes,
what we can take to the,
yeah,
next level. But I think possibly some additional materials in that last, you know, leading,
yeah,
into next autumn.
Interesting stuff. Well, Nancy, mm-hmm, we will watch this space with interest.
Great. Definitely. And do get involved. You know, watch out for the consultations and,
yeah,
have a look and tell us, yeah, what you think about it. What,
absolutely,
could we could do?
Absolutely. Nancy, it's been brilliant to talk to you again. Wonderful to chat to you. Really, really interesting stuff. And we wish you all the best with all of the work that you're doing and look forward to the new version of Birth to Five.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me here to share the news.
So there you have it. Thank you very much to Nancy for joining us for this episode, and also, of course, to you people for listening along as well. Now, as this is our 200th episode, I've got a few more thank yous as well to share with you. Thank you very much to the wonderful podcast team at Early Excellence, to Simon for brilliant editing, as always, to Joe on the social media and working your magic on all of the socials, and of course to everyone else at Early Excellence for their continued support.